Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
As in previous elections, despite the overwhelming concern by Americans generally about the changes in the environment that are becoming ever more evident every day, this midterm election remains mysteriously silent about the future. Some people, however, are no longer relying on national leadership and are taking control of their futures right in their own communities. In just a moment, you're about to hear our most impressive mayor speak about how their community won't be waiting to do the right thing. They're leading the way in building a strong, sustainable city right now. A great voice of the earth is about to speak up, so stay tuned. Today, we heard on the news that we've been having this decrease in the cost of gasoline, and it's served us all very well. But the unfortunate thing is, for some reason, it sounds as if the price of gasoline is going to go up again. And for those of us who simply have to deal with our own lives, it's difficult enough to try to imagine how we accommodate these changes. But when you start to talk about a municipality, some of these changes become really difficult, and it's hard to even imagine how large-scale municipality deals with these kinds of things. They're taking all sorts of actions to try to look at a better future, a sustainable future, both economically and environmentally and socially and culturally. And one of the cities that really is taking that lead is the city of Irvine, California. And they're involved in a new project to advance a better future. And joining us now to talk about that is the mayor, Beth Crom. Welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
First question is, how does a city deal with these kinds of changes that are happening? I mean, it has to be difficult.
Well, you know, the question is not only how do cities do it, but why more cities aren't doing it and what could be achieved if all cities were committing themselves through a variety of mechanisms to impacting climate change and reducing emissions, and understanding how to encourage both at a residential and business level a reduction in energy consumption and a move towards conservation and innovative technologies. So what we have been working to do here in the city of Irvine is to understand how we could enhance what has been a historic commitment to environmental stewardship and sustainability. But when I became mayor in 2004, and when I came on the council really in 2000, what I noticed was that we had been in a position of leadership throughout the 70s and 80s, not a lot of investment and effort in the 90s when there was a considerable shift in the policy of the council. But we had also become comfortable. We were sort of resting on laurels that had been developed early on, and there was a lot that we could be doing, and so that's what I've been working to try and affect through green building programs, through partnerships on energy reduction, through a project that we are doing to convert a decommissioned military base into the first great metropolitan park of the 21st century, and to do so in a fully sustainable way. And as you mentioned, through our partnership with Toyota and the National Fuel Cell Research Institute, test driving a hydrogen hybrid fuel cell vehicle, but also through our partnership through the Conference of Mayors with Cities for Climate Protection, with the plug-in partnership. So we are trying to focus on all fronts and help to educate the community so that we can ensure a brighter future, not just for our community, but for the world.
You know, it's kind of interesting, a commitment like Irvine's to this future sometimes, from some perspectives, becomes sort of politicized, suggesting somehow that, I know it's radical or too progressive or something, but really it isn't a political issue. It has to do with people. And I think that that's what you're committing to. Talk a little bit about that. You mentioned, for example, that more cities should be doing this. Why should they?
Well, you know, there is a hopeful sign in that issues like this were at you know, fairly recently considered sort of marginal issues, and I think they are being embraced much more in a mainstream way. The fact that a lot of the national leadership organizations have taken affirmative positions on climate protection and energy conservation, I think shows that what was once considered a fringe issue is now a mainstream issue. certainly with the focus that's been generated by An Inconvenient Truth and other things. But I can tell you that at a national level, the leaders that I work with come from all sides of the political spectrum. And even here in the city of Irvine, where we have representatives on our council of different political persuasions and philosophic positions, we have had unanimous support for our new green building program, both residential and commercial, as well as for the commitment with the development of the Orange County Great Park to using clean technologies, to ensuring drought-tolerant plantings and things that will help us conserve water, help us conserve energy. In fact, we're looking at ways to produce alternative forms of energy so that what we hope to create with this Great Park project is truly a living laboratory of innovative technologies where people can come and see buildings that are being powered by solar, by perhaps wind. You know, we've looked into all sorts of alternative energy opportunities and welcome the opportunity to help people see that things that we kind of have tended to think are way out there are technologies that can be employed today.
Well, it's fabulous, and I commend Irvine for its long-term commitment to this, and as well, Mayor Crom, yours very personally. It's obvious that you're very committed on a personal level to this, and you're also very articulate about this. Let's talk about this. Part of the effort, the partnerships that are emerging to advance a sustainable future are existing between communities like yourself or municipalities and as well the corporate sector and the NGO sector, and that's kind of what's developing in terms of your involvement in testing the Toyota fuel cell car, which is in partnership with the National Fuel Cell Research Center. You have the opportunity to test drive a Toyota fuel cell car. How long have you actually had this vehicle?
We've had the vehicle for about 6 months, and it is the chassis of a Toyota Highlander, but it is a fuel cell powered vehicle, and it's a very comfortable ride. It's a completely quiet ride. And, you know, it's great to be able to take the vehicle out. I've worked with the local schools to help children see that this technology is emerging. And, you know, I think that the fuel cell technology is just one piece of what is an overall effort to find ways to use alternative energy sources for fueling vehicles as well as other, you know, other of our energy needs. We are part of the Plug-In Partnership, which advances plug-in hybrid fuel cell, where you've got gasoline and electric, mm-hmm. and we think that that's important, too, to have many different fronts on which we're working, because bringing something into the mainstream is going to take some time. We have certain technologies, and, you know, here in Southern California, particularly in our area, we see so many Priuses on the road. We also have here in the city of Irvine, Mazda Corporation, which is also working on a hybrid electric vehicle. And I think we need to look at all of these opportunities, not just one, and make sure that people see that they do have options available to them today, as well as technologies that may be available in the next few years.
Well, it's rather interesting. The fuel cell car is a hydrogen powered car. And I believe this one is 100% hydrogen powered?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Some people are suggesting that the workable fuel cells on a large scale basis may be 10 years or so off. But let's talk about the technology and how this feels to you so that people can get a sense of its applicability. First of all, what everybody wants to know is how do you fuel this thing up?
Well, there's a hydrogen fueling station at the University of California at Irvine here in our city, which is where the National Fuel Cell Research Institute is housed. And actually, the institute takes responsibility for the fueling of the vehicle. So from my standpoint, I get to just hop in the car and have it fully fueled. But I think one of the real challenges that faces hydrogen technology is how to create hydrogen without using fossil fuels. Right now, in order to create hydrogen, you need to use some other type of fuel source. And obviously, I think long-term application of hydrogen technology is going to require us to find a clean way to produce hydrogen. And a renewable way to produce hydrogen.
Well, the wonderful news is the fact that there's lots of people out there right now who are investing billions of dollars to develop exactly those things. And ultimately, it's going to create our economies of the future. Hydrogen certainly is going to play a big role in the future. So, for example, solar and wind, you take water and you apply electricity from some source, and you end up with hydrogen. It's fairly complex. I mean, it takes a lot of electricity to create hydrogen, but the source is water and conceivably sun or wind. That's not a bad mix.
Well, you know, somebody, I think it may have been the chancellor for the university when we rolled out the partnership with Toyota, was talking about the fact that, you know, when automobiles were just coming into usage, when, you know, everybody didn't have three automobiles in their garage, the same kind of infrastructure had to be created in order to support gasoline-fueled technology. And so it isn't as if what we are ultimately going to have to do in order to provide the alternative fuel sources necessary for the energy of the future hasn't already occurred once in the last, you know, century when frankly it wasn't typical for everybody to have a vehicle, and therefore there wasn't a gas station on every corner. And so I believe that the resources necessary in order to support innovative technologies can be produced. I think the reason we're feeling a little impatient is because perhaps we failed to be as proactive as we needed to be on these technologies 20 or 30 years ago. And now I think, you know, the good news is there's an emerging consensus that we really do need to do something. The bad news is by the time you get that level of consensus, it's usually 20 years past the point of being truly proactive. So I think there's a real urgency today. We recognize that we cannot depend on oil reserves indefinitely, and even if we could, we shouldn't, because of the damage it's doing to our environment. And so I think we have a real opportunity now to bring all the parties to the table and try and advance things a little more rapidly.
I always look at this from both the environmental perspective, but as well the business perspective. And the truth is, there are people who are going to make billions and billions and billions of dollars off of these technologies in the future. There is no doubt. So it's a wise business decision. The transition from an oil-based economy into a sustainable economy, a city like Irvine will probably end up 10 years from now employing lots of people involved in these technologies and industries, and put people back to work. And if we don't, the world is going to pass us by, because the entire world is on a race to try to find solutions to the oil dilemma. And it's just a matter of time. So why not be in the pipeline?
Well, we actually have companies like Quantum Technologies here that are doing fuel cell research. You know, I think we are seeing not only the opportunity in the private sector to generate resources through these technologies, but, you know, one of the things that I think we really need to be exploring is the leveraging power that cities and states, that government has. You know, we are all purchasing vehicles for fleets. We are all building our own municipal facilities that we could be building in more sustainable ways. So if we were using public dollars to invest in those things which are not only good for our communities, but which help to create the kind of critical mass necessary in order to advance new technologies, if every city, which is fundamentally what the plug-in partnership is about, if every city said we would commit to purchasing five hybrid electric vehicles, that would, think about it, think about all the cities in America, if every city agreed to do their share, that would create a market in and of itself. And so I think that's where we in municipal leadership can be more creative in our own thinking. Not just about what's important in our own city, but how, if we work together as cities, and I happen to believe that cities are the infrastructure that are holding up our country right now. I think we learned that with Katrina and other things, that at the end of the day, we are the ones that are on the front lines. We are the ones that are working directly with the citizens of this country, and we have a responsibility not only to educate, but to lead, and I think there's a lot we can be doing. The U.S. Conference of Mayors has just created a new committee on climate protection, which I've been invited to participate on, and look forward to exploring how we can encourage cities around the country to invest resources they would be investing anyway, but to do it in ways that help to advance technologies and also help to demonstrate to their citizens that they are environmentally responsible and interested in a sustainable world in the future.
You make such a valid point. It's so important. Many of us are hoping for some sort of national initiative to get these things rolling, but the truth of the matter is you're affecting millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis. You provide the support to keep those cities operating. I live down in San Diego, and I get on a freeway, and I'm always amazed at how all of us down here, it's 1.5 million people, manage to get along on the freeways, and we get our food delivered and things like that. It's a huge responsibility to keep this going. And the fact that the change now is coming from municipalities in terms of sustainability because they have to. They have
I think
no
that's the most hopeful sign, to be honest, is that we're not sitting on our hands and waiting for somebody else to do it, but that cities and municipal leaders are forging collaborations with organizations and the business community to look at how we can work together and leverage our opportunities to do more. We're actually going to be participating in a conference here on November 9th where we brought together the Urban Land Institute, representatives from the U.S. Green Building Organization, people from the sustainability consulting world, people from the development community, and we're putting on a conference that is called Orange and Gold and Green All Over. And the whole idea is to bring people who are invested on the environmental stewardship side and people who are engaged in developing here in Orange County and in business, and showing them models of people who have companies that have invested in building green, and why that has not only been important for the environment, but successful for those companies. We here in Irvine have a Ford Motor Company that's LEED certified building, and other examples of real positive corporate responsibility in demonstrating that the bottom line can be met while still advancing a vision that's much more sustainable for the future.
This is so interesting. This conversation was going to focus on the Toyota fuel cell car and Irvine's involvement in driving that one vehicle. And look where it's taken us, and it's a wonderful expansion of that topic. One of the things that's interesting about fuel cell cars, getting back to the topic at hand here, is the fact that they're quite amazing when you hop in one and you take it for a ride. Talk to me about what you're actually experiencing with the Toyota fuel cell car in terms of its drivability.
Well, In almost every respect, it drives as well, if not better, depending on what you're currently driving, as a traditional vehicle. It is completely silent. My understanding is that one of the, challenges is that, animals have to be especially careful because they don't hear the car, they don't hear it coming, But it is also a situation where when you turn on the key, you don't hear that vroom vroom that we're used to hearing in our internal combustion engine. So, it's just a completely quiet ride. It is, as I say, a Highlander, so you're driving in a, sort of SUV kind of experience. And it has all the bells and whistles. It has the GPS system and, a radio. You're not sort of in a prototype. It is a little nerve-wracking to feel like you're driving in a $1 million vehicle, especially here in Southern California, where people can drive fairly aggressively, but it's just a very comfortable ride and very smooth and gets, a much higher fuel efficiency, although the capacity of the, engine is something you have to watch, and because we can't just pull over and fill up wherever we'd like, right now with only a prototype, we do have to kind of keep our travel distance is restricted, so we know we won't get ourselves into trouble.
Well, I know that one of the objectives for a company like Toyota is to have you folks drive this car. They want you to put it through the test. How do you manage to get that car circulated throughout the city to make sure it's being driven on a regular basis?
Well, The city council members, the city manager, some of our public works staff have all been certified by Toyota to drive the vehicle. We try and take it with us places where we also have the opportunity to let people know that we have the hydrogen hybrid fuel cell vehicle with us so that people can take a look at it. So we just, you know, get it out and about. It says, you know, fuel cell hybrid vehicle on the side of it. So for anybody paying attention as we're driving along, we occasionally get the thumbs up or high sign. And otherwise, it's just, you know, being put to use in the course of our daily activities. In every way, one could easily forget that you're driving the vehicle, except that it's so quiet.
The city of Irvine is an amazing... You guys are really on the cutting edge here, I think. And for people who might want to find out more about what's going on in Irvine, what would you recommend they do?
Well, they should go to our website, which is cityofirvine.org, and they can find information out about all of our green building recycling program. You know, I also want to mention that the city of Irvine was truly a leader back in the 70s when we were... the first city in America to have curbside recycling, but also we were the first city in America to ban chlorofluorocarbons in our city. And at the time, we're sort of, I wasn't on the council at the time, but the leadership at the time was sort of laughed at, and then a lot of people followed suit. And so, in fact, when it came to trying to have a positive impact on what was then the emerging notion of our human impact on the ozone layer, Irvine was in leadership. So I'm pleased that we now have reinvigorated our commitment to be a leader in this country on issues of this nature, and look forward to working with others and other communities and other leaders in this, you know, city leaders in this country to see if we can't expedite what I think we all agree needs to happen, and that is to create a model wherein not necessarily every city can do everything, but everybody can do something. And I think citizens as well are interested in knowing how they can be actively engaged in ensuring a brighter future for our country and ensuring that we're leaving to future generations the resources that we've been blessed to enjoy in our own lifetime.
Well, this is a difficult question, but I think it is an important question, and that is, what is it about Irvine? What is it about that city, just south of L.A., that you think has led to this unique effort to really be a leader?
Well, I think leadership has made a difference. You know, at the risk of being a little self-congratulatory, it actually does take people in leadership who see their responsibility as being more than filling potholes and trimming trees. And, you know, one of my predecessors, Larry Agron, was a major leader in the 70s and 80s in advancing these issues. And when I came on the council in 2000, he and I worked together to continue to advance them. And then when I became mayor in 2004, I decided there were certain things I wanted to ensure we accomplished during my term as mayor. And we've been very aggressive about pursuing those. I also believe that we have to be willing to sit down with all of the stakeholders at the table. You need to have the business community engaged. This isn't something where we're going to achieve a great deal by imposing requirements on others. I think this is something where we will accomplish far more if we engage in an integrated conversation about where the value is in these initiatives for all of the parties who are at the table. And that's what we've done. Our green building program is a voluntary program, but we're seeing voluntary compliance. And at the end of the day, that is a much better, that in itself is a much more sustainable model for the future, because then it does not become subject to the political swinging of the pendulum, but rather becomes part of a culture of a community. And that's what we're trying to do here. Irvine is 35 years old, so we are a newer city. In that time, we've grown from a city of about 17,000 to a city of 185,000. We have a very active business community. We're a very culturally diverse community. We're a city that's been recognized as the safest city in America, as a great community for young people. We have a lot to be proud of, but we also, you know, with privilege comes responsibility. And I think that we have a responsibility here in Orange County, which is a county of 3 million people, and a county which is challenged with all of the things that any major metropolitan area is challenged with, to show that there are ways to take steps in the right direction. I think that's what Irvine's trying to do.
UC Irvine has always been a leader in advancing technologies. I'm curious what role you think they've played in terms of the emergence of Irvine as this model.
We are working very closely with the university and have engaged graduate students at the university to help us envision what we might be doing in terms of innovative technologies at the Great Park. So I think we have some real opportunities to leverage both the academic and the municipal and the corporate environments to showcase what can be done when people are thinking creatively and working collaboratively.
Well, I'm hoping that this showcase can become commonplace around the country, that your message it will get out there and people can turn to what's happening in Irvine as a model. It's being done. It can be done. We've been talking with Beth Crom, mayor of Irvine, just south of L.A. Beth Crom, thanks so much for adding your voice here to the Wildside News.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, between now and next week, I want each of you to get involved in your local elections. Become informed. Take a stand, speak up, and speak out. Change is coming to a neighborhood near you. Next week, we go in-depth on the environment and the elections. Until next Thursday, or any time on the archives, this is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again when your voice of the earth delivers here on the Wildside News.